The lights are on red. We're away.
Hello and welcome to MotoGPOD, the internet radio show about motorcycle road racing. Today is Friday, June 1st, 2007, and this is episode number 80. I am Bob Hayes, your host. As always, I am broadcasting to you from a secret, undisclosed location deep in the Oregon forest, or Oregon, as you back Easterners like to call it. Today we have somewhat of a hodgepodge of a show. Got it down lengthwise, so a little bit more in line of where I like the shows to be, about 45 minutes, but we've just got kind of a mix going on. It's all me today. We've got some news. We talk about a website that I found that might be interesting. We've got some reader email. We always like reader email. A little bit of commentary about a blog also that's out there at MotoGPMatters.com. And we have our Mugello preview, where we talk a little bit about the upcoming race at Mugello, the 2007 Gran Premio Italia Alice, something like that, which I hope I'm not massacring the pronunciation too badly, but it's going to be a very, very good race, and we're really excited about it. So I do want to say thanks very much for downloading this show. I hope that you enjoy listening to the show every week. Like I said, go ahead and send us email if you'd like. Email address is bob@motogpod.com. It's an easy one to remember, bob@motogpod.com. If you'd like to send email that will go to myself and Jim Race and Jules Cisek, send that to MotoGPOD@MotoGPOD.com. That's kind of a group address, goes to all three of us. We'd love to hear from you. We always like to hear from listeners, and we always answer the emails. So I think that's probably enough of the administrative stuff. I'm sure that there were some other things that I intended to mention, but they are not in my notes. And if it didn't get in my notes, it must either not have been important enough or I was sleeping. So why don't we just knock it off with all this administrative stuff and get on with the rest of the show. We're going to start things off with some MotoGP news that I found out and about on the internet this past week, the last few days. First off, it's confirmed that Curtis Roberts will ride for Team KR as a wild card in addition to Kenny Roberts Jr., not instead of Kenny Roberts Jr., like I said last week. So we got both Curtis and Kenny riding. Now, that's really great news. It should be interesting stuff. Hopefully Team KR has worked out a few things in order to find some more speed and give these guys a more competitive ride, because they haven't got off to a very good start so far this season. Curtis did ride for Team KR back in 2004 until he was injured about halfway through the season. Then he came back in 2005 for the last race of the year at Valencia. I'm sure that he'll be looking for better luck than he had on that particular race back then. But, you know, it's a completely different motorcycle in so many ways. It'll be like completely turning over a new page for him, and we look for him to do pretty well out there, and hopefully Kenny too. Talking about coming back to MotoGP, Olivier Jacques will be back riding for Kawasaki after missing the Shanghai and Le Mans races. But both he and fellow Kawasaki rider Randy Dupuy are going to be riding with injuries. A Kawasaki press release reads, "Despite their injuries, both Frenchmen are determined to finally show the true potential of Kawasaki's Ninja ZX-RR this weekend around the twists and turns of the Mugello circuit, which is unrivaled for atmosphere on the Grand Prix calendar due to the amphitheater effect of the surrounding Tuscan hills." And it's like, beautiful writing. It's wow. It's almost like I'm there. In any case, good luck to both Jacques and Dupuy. I hate to say that they're going to need it, but I think that might be the case. But, you know, we'll see a good performance out of the Kawasaki team. Moving on, Italian news magazine Motosprint ran a story saying that the president of Piaggio announced that Aprilia will return to MotoGP. He feels as though, quote, "Europe's biggest motorcycle manufacturer should be in the top class," unquote. And unfortunately, he also said that this most likely will not happen for at least 3 years. However, Aprilia are saying that they'll do some World Superbike races in 2008, leading up to a full 2009 season with their new V4 Superbike. So that should be good to start seeing Aprilia back in the top classes. I know they're a little upset about the proposed changes to the 125 and 250cc classes that are going to eliminate two-strokes. You know, the Aprilia dominates those lower classes, and they're not too thrilled about that. But In any event, we will see. And while we're talking about World Superbike and Aprilia being in it, there are rumors that Colin Edwards will be going back there next year. We're going to have to see on that one. Like I said, it's rumors. I've said it before, Colin is pretty much the perfect teammate for Valentino Rossi, and Rossi's contract goes through 2008. I think that Yamaha probably would like to keep him, and if I was Colin, I would rather be a medium-sized fish in a very small pond that is perched at the lofty heights of MotoGP rather than taking a chance on being possibly a small fish in World Superbike. Unless he can get Toeslander Hagesride, I think that he'd probably be better served by staying in MotoGP. Stealing some notes from Julian Ryder, which, by the way, bad podcasters copy, good podcasters steal. But Julian Ryder wrote that, quote, all the factories are rolling out some new power for this weekend at Mugello. Kawasaki has new bodywork, a few more revs, and four or five more horsepower thanks to some new engine internals, probably camshafts. Rossi says that Yamaha found a bit as well. Honda aren't saying yet that, if anything, that they have come up with. But it's Suzuki who have been the hardest at work, because apparently Suzuki has basically got a new engine that they were testing after Le Mans. It's virtually a new engine. They've improved the other one so much. It's probably a big bang, which should make things easier for them going into corners, getting on the power coming out of them, while giving the tires a bit more of a fighting chance to last the entire race. Now, I have to admit, I thought that Suzuki was already using a big bang engine. I know they were last year in the 990 cc's, and I assume so that they were doing though this year in the 800 cc's. According to the writer piece, it sounds like this big bang is new, and maybe they were using a screamer engine before. And if you didn't know the difference, a big bang engine, you've got the four cylinders and basically two cylinders fire at the same time. So it's almost like a V-twin sort of a pulse, whereas on a screamer engine, all four cylinders are firing independently. So maybe I'll do a tech pick about Big Bang and screamer engines in some future show, like during the summer break or something. Not sure if that would be real interesting to everyone or not. You might be give me some feedback, bob@motogpod.com, if you'd like to hear something like that. While we're talking about Suzuki, Corona Alstari Suzuki, which is the World Superbike team, they issued a press release that opens up the question that they might make a move to MotoGP next year. Not next year. Francis Botta has made no secret of the fact that he doesn't like the proposed rule changes for World Superbike that are going to allow 1,200cc machines, and it's well known that Dorna and the MSMA would love to have more teams on the grid. But what makes this story even more enticing is the tidbit concerning rumors of a link between MotoGP, Team Alstari, and former 500cc world champion Kevin Schwantz. Schwantz has worked for Suzuki for years, and he has long ties with them, so that might not be all that far-fetched if the rest of the story isn't a big old far-fetched fantasy, which seems to be in some debate right now. And we're going to close out this news section with a classic feel-good story that the newspapers love so much, and it really isn't news per se, but it doesn't really fit anywhere else in the show, and I thought it was kind of neat. Basically, here's the deal. Jim Race made a post on the Clinica Mobile guestbook on their website at clinicamobile.com. And he wrote, quote, is there any info or updates on the riders who went down in the Silverstone World Supersport and World Superbike races? News has been sparse, unquote. And now here comes the feel-good part. Wait for it. Those nice people at Clinica Mobile sent Jim an actual, real, live, genuine, personal reply, and which I thought was kind of cool. They said, dear Jim, we saw your entry in our guest book. Despite the numerous crashes on the slippery track at Silverstone on race day, no rider was seriously injured with the exception of super sport Italian rider Gino Nannelli, who dislocated his knee. All the other riders who crashed in Sunday's races, for instance, Kageyama, Pulita, and Toeslander, only suffered minor contusions. Best regards and thank you for checking out our website, signed Claudia Chirici, which I thought that was really, really cool. It's kind of rare that you get that sort of treatment where you get a personal reply like that anymore, so kudos to Clinica Mobile, in so many ways, not just for their website, but also for the service that they provide. And you can check them out at clinicamobile.com, and I will put a link to that up on the MotoGPOD website. Here's an interesting thing that I stumbled across, a link that I found the other day. I hadn't heard about this before. I don't usually go looking for this kind of stuff, so it might be old news. It might have been around for a while. You might have heard of it, but then again, you might not have. It was new to me, and I thought it was pretty interesting and well worth a look. So I took a look, and the website is tvunetworks.com, and that's TVU as in Tango Victor Uniform. Networks.com. Basically, TVU is a peer-to-peer service that streams television channels over the interweb. And technology-wise, it's kind of like a BitTorrent, but with streaming media, whereas licensing and legality-wise, it's pretty much being compared to Napster. And again, it's probably a lot like BitTorrent, where it's basically illegal. And this is a Chinese company, so I really wouldn't be surprised if there is some kind of illegality or trickery or something going on. It does seem to be too good to be true. Now, you might be asking yourself, why am I going on about this? Well, I'll tell you why. One of the channels on TVU that they offer is Star Sports, which is basically an Asian outlet of ESPN. And one of the things that they show a lot of on Star Sports is motorcycle racing and motorsports in general. So if you don't have a MotoGP.com subscription, well, you should go buy one. But even if you don't go buy one, or if you want some other stuff in addition to what you get on your MotoGP.com subscription, because trust me, I know that MotoGP.com is less than perfect, you should possibly check out this TVUnetworks.com in addition to that MotoGP fix. I checked it out, and I happened across World Rally Championship coverage right off the bat. You know, I just turned it on, found the Star Sports, and whammo, World Rally. And I have been something I've been missing for quite a while since Speed TV dropped World Rally from their lineup a couple of years ago now. So that was kind of cool to watch. The image quality was quite good. It was definitely watchable. It's like a BitTorrent and peer-to-peer. So basically, the more people that are watching the channel, the better the quality gets. I looked around on some of the other channels, and Judge Judy just looked fantastic. So, you know, if I really wanted to sit there and rot some brain cells by watching, you know, crap like Judge Judy, it'd be nice and beautifully clear. As it was, the World Rally was good. It was a little chunky, but it wasn't too bad. There was another channel called the Racing Channel, and that one I couldn't get to load at all. So I'll try again later and see what they've got. But whatever, it's kind of cool. This free TVU player is unfortunately only for Windows, but it worked fine on an Intel Macintosh running Parallels with Windows XP and all of that. Worked great, no problems. The whole thing pretty much seems to be free. I didn't run across anywhere. You know, I certainly didn't put any credit cards in. There is a link to sign up for an account and, you know, sign in to your account and all that. But the player worked fine for me without setting up that account, which I was trying to avoid doing because I don't want any more spam and didn't want to go to the effort of setting up a fake email account. So, you know, no more spam for me. And we'll see how long it works. And like I said, with this one, you know, like anything else that sounds like it's going to be a free lunch, there's going to be a catch somewhere. As of yet, I'm not sure what it is other than the sort of questionable legality of the whole thing. So you might want to check it out while it's still around at tvunetworks.com. But if your computer explodes or something, or you get a nice virus or whatever else, don't come blaming me. But it is well worth a look if you have a Windows computer. I got an email from MotoGPOD listener Jess Heidenreich that was kind of fun. Hopefully I'm pronouncing your name the way you do, Jess. That's pretty much just sort of a shot in the dark for me trying to dredge up some high school German there. But Jess Heidenreich writes, "Hey, Bob, how's it going in your world? Great show last week. I had a lot of fun listening to your exchange with Jim. Very cool," which thank you, Jess. I appreciate it. Glad you liked it. And Jess continues the important part. "Jim mentioned that Caparossi probably isn't going anywhere for a while. What's your opinion on this? Many of the European in my road racing forum say he's surely exiting after this year, according to the local media sources over there. If that were to happen, I'm curious to see if Ducati will make another aggressive bid for Hayden or not. The buzz that I hear is that Nick will be looking for another ride after this season, even though he should have another year on contract with HRC. I also wanted to know what your thoughts were on Rossi retiring from GP. Do you think his retirement is contingent on him winning another championship or not? Whatever he decides, I'm sure he'll end up in WRC eventually, even though I'd love to see him stomp a mudhole in Alonso in Formula One. If Rossi does leave, I think that Yamaha would also make another bid for Nicky, assuming that HRC lets him go, that is." Now, that's kind of a lot of questions, but first off, Jess, I would have said that Caparossi is likely to say, But after what I've been hearing, I've been hearing those same rumblings. I've been reading this that he's on his way out as well. It's been written that he's not real happy with the way that he's being treated at Ducati, that he feels that Stoner's getting all the attention because Stoner's winning races and, you know, Caparezzi's sucking at the back and et cetera, blah, blah, blah. And that it's not fair to Caparezzi, who's been the loyal Ducati team member for so long, yada, yada, yada. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that here in just a minute or two. But first off, don't forget, from my point of view, all of this is somewhat of a rumor. For all I know, Caparezzi hasn't said any of those things, but this is what's being written in some of the websites, and it's in the Italian and Spanish news, which, let's be honest, is not always the most reliable source. Now, granted, it might be the gospel truth, but I don't know that for sure. But I do think that Caparezzi is professional enough to continue to work hard and probably improve how things have been going for him so far this season. He's also an Italian, which is a really big plus for the Ducati team, and they're going to want to keep somebody on there, I do believe, that is an Italian. So granted, they could probably find another Italian fairly easily, or, they might go for Hayden, I don't know. But I have a hunch that they're going to want to hang on to Caparezzi. As far as Rossi retiring from GP, I mean, right now, what we know is that his contract goes through 2008, that last year he said he was not going to Formula One. The WRC thing does look like a possibility that he might try to do that. Rally is huge in Europe, and it's a very popular sport, and I think Rossi, Rossi's raced in several rallies. He seems to like it. Whether or not he's any good is somewhat remains to be seen, but we'll have to see about that one. But I do think that he would like to retire on a high note. I don't know if necessarily there's any sort of contractual obligations that is going to be contingent on him winning a championship or not. He might have something hidden in there where, if he picks up this championship, they'll release him or who knows what. But I think that on a personal level alone, Rossi is going to want to exit from MotoGP on a high note, not have gone. I mean, assume, let's say he does not win the championship this year. So that would mean 2 years in a row that he did not make the championship and then he retires. I don't think he's going to want to do that. That doesn't seem like a Rossi-esque kind of a thing. I just went on to write a little bit more here. He said, I also wanted to hear your opinion on the source of animosity towards American riders. It seems like forever there's been a certain degree of hatred towards the Americans in the paddock from the European fans and possibly European riders as well. What do you think about this? Personally, when I watch World Road Racing, I let go of all political, religious convictions and enjoy the event objectively. I think it's great to have something without all the bad noise from the outside world, like race, religion, world politics, blah, blah, blah. I guess I'd expect, or at least hope, that other fans would look at it the same way. Is it our largely unpopular world politics and military ventures that are the source of this loathing, or what? I don't know, just curious. And this is kind of also something I've touched on before. But as far as that animosity goes towards American writers, I think it's kind of a little bit part and parcel of the standard sort of anti-American thing. I also think it's somewhat overstated. I don't think it's as bad as we might be seeing here. But because what I've always seen with most foreigners is that they like Americans, American people, just fine, but they don't particularly like America, the government. Now, whether that's because McDonald's or Coca-Cola or whatever kind of destroying their national identity and invading their society, or whether it's because we've been doing this Team America World Police thing for so long and everybody's getting a little tired of it or whatever, it is something that I've definitely seen where they don't really like America, but they do like Americans. And but on the other hand, whenever I've been out of the country, I've never, ever, ever felt like I was personally not welcomed. Like I said, they really like Americans. But the kind of attitude is going to likely carry over into the paddock. I mean, these are people just like everybody else, and it's only amplified by the fact that Americans have some pretty choice jobs right now in MotoGP. Hayden, Edwards, and Hopkins are all riding for factory teams. They have, one of a very few available slots in MotoGP as factory team guy. And we all know that Dorna wants to increase MotoGP's fan base, Dorna and the MSMA and probably all the teams, they want to increase that fan base in the United States. And I think that a certain part of the reasons that Hopkins, Hayden, and Edwards are where they are right now, why they have the jobs that they have, has to do with the fact that, you know, the MSMA and Dorna want to increase that American fan base. I'm sure that it's the case with Honda and Hayden, and I'd be very surprised if it didn't also somewhat factor into Edwards and Hopkins riding for Yamaha and Suzuki as well. You know, they want to sell motorcycles here, pure and simple. And if they can get people to watch MotoGP and get that top of the mind awareness about their brand, you know, that's just a good thing for them. So, you know, this tends to make the Italians and Spaniards somewhat upset because for them, you know, motorcycle racing is like the national pastime, you know, particularly in Spain. And there's only three Spaniards and three Italians in the entire MotoGP premier class, you know, the top class, whereas, you know, you've got four and now five when you bring in Curtis Roberts, Americans racing there. So that might be part of the cause of any animosity out there as much as anything. But other than that, I don't really know. I don't really have too much of an opinion. Maybe it's something that we can talk to Liam Schubert about next time we talk to him on the phone. And as far as putting aside politics and all that other stuff, I totally agree. I always have been a big fan of, you know, that you don't necessarily have to be rooting for the guy that's just from your country. You know, these are all great writers. They all have some reason or another to like them or to hate them or to root for them or to just, you know, hope that somebody beats them or whatever it is. That, you know, I mean, because even if you sort of are rooting for somebody to, you know, boy, I don't care who wins as long as Mladen doesn't, that kind of a attitude, you know, you're still sort of somewhat a Mladen fan. He's kind of the guy you love to hate, right? And that was why Max Biaggi was always so cool in MotoGP. He made such a great bad boy. And I mean, I like Max. I think Max is cool, but he was the bad boy. It's like, oh, got to beat Max. But whatever, you know, like I said, I do agree that we should keep politics and all that out of it because, you know, purity of sport and all that kind of good stuff. Yeah, so thanks again very much for that email, Jess. I do appreciate it. And if any of you other listeners out there would like to send in an email, the address is, as always, bob@motogpod.com. I always like to hear from everybody, and I always answer the email, and oftentimes I'll even use it when it's kind of interesting. So send your stuff in. And one more thing while we're talking about stuff that other people wrote, which makes life easier for me, I do want to share an entry from David Emmett's excellent MotoGP blog called Kropotkin Thinks, which you can find at MotoGPMatters.com. And so if you don't read Kropotkin Thinks, you really, really need to check it out. You owe it to yourself to look at this thing. You can find it, like I said, at MotoGPMatters.com. And David is a fantastic writer. He's also a regular poster on RideOn2.com, another good website. So, you know, you're kind of missing out if you don't see some of this stuff. And he's also been on this show, so, you know, we know that he's really, really cool. But in any case, in case you haven't been a real regular reader of Kropotkin Thinks, here's a entry that he did last week. This is actually dated May 23rd, and it kind of links in with Jess's comments about Caparossi, and I thought it was pretty interesting. So here goes. Danny Pedrosa is keeping his options for 2008 open, it seems. The young Spaniard, who was widely expected to be the main challenger to Valentino Rossi for the title this season, has had an offer to renew his contract with Repsol Honda for the past month, but he and his management have put a decision for the contract on hold. Pedrosa has been a loyal Honda rider since he first entered Grand Prix in 2001, riding three seasons in the 125 class, two in the 250s, and now he's in his second season on board a MotoGP bike. Logic dictates that Pedrosa will eventually sign on once again with Honda for the next 2 years. After all, there are many rides as good as the Repsol Honda in the MotoGP paddock. But one seat may become vacant next year, and a seat which is looking particularly attractive at this moment, and that's Loris Caparossi, who has made no secret of his displeasure with Ducati after seeing his young teammate, Casey Stoner, come into the Ducati garage, win three out of the five races so far, and garner all of the attention and presumably support of the Ducati team. Caparossi, who has been with the Bologna-based factory since Ducati's return to MotoGP, feels rather betrayed by the lack of support he has received. He's blaming this for his relatively poor results so far this season. As a consequence, the chances are high that Caparossi could leave the Italian team at the end of the year, either to retire or, it's whispered, to go and join Kawasaki, who have made major steps forward since the start of the season. Kawasaki are known to be looking for big-name riders to try to attract sponsorship and regain a spot at the front of the field, and Caparossi could be just what they're looking for. The one thing standing in the way of Pedrosa joining Ducati is the question of whether the Italian factory want to have an Italian rider on the team. With Casey Stoner in, has a very real chance at the title this year. His position is virtually unassailable, which would mean that any vacancy created by the departure of Caparossi would see Italian riders getting preferential treatment. The options for Ducati would seem to be Marco Melandri or possibly either Andrea Dovizioso or Alex De Angelis if they move up from the 250s, leaving Danny Pedrosa out in the cold. And the source of this story is fairly circumlocutory. David's quite a writer there. I can't even say this word. It came here via the Spanish daily sports paper AS.com's website, which quotes the Spanish magazine Solo Moto, which is known to have outstanding contacts inside the MotoGP paddock. And like I said, it was a good story, and I ended up using quite a bit of that in my reply to Jess and all that, but I kind of wanted to read it to you because it's just an example of the fine stuff that you're going to find at Kropotkin Thinks. So, good stuff. And if you want to read more of the stuff that David writes on his Kropotkin Thinks blog, you can find that blog at MotoGPMatters.com. It's an excellent resource. It's very, very well written. It's great stuff. And David's reports on Ride On 2 are also fantastic. You really should check them out. Like I said, I wish I could talk the way this guy writes. You have to read this stuff. It's witty. It's funny. It's good. It's just great stuff. All right, it's time for our Mugello preview feature. And round 6 of the season finds us at Mugello for the Alice Italian Grand Prix, the Gran Premio d'Italia Alice. But along with Spain, you know, like I said earlier in the show, Italy is the heartland of MotoGP. They love their motorcycle riding. I mean, for one, they've got Valentino Rossi, so he's a national hero virtually. I mean, the guy can't even live in Italy anymore because he just he has no life there effectively. So he's lives in England because that way at least he can, you know, once in a while go down the street without being recognized by everybody, only by many of the people. And Spain is no less a huge fan of motorcycle racing. They've always liked their motorcycle racing. It's kind of the home of motorcycle racing, if you will. And in Italy, you've got no less than 4 teams based there. You got the factory Ducati team, you've got the factory Yamaha team, and you have the Honda satellite teams, Gresini Racing and Konica Minolta. They all have, you know, their main offices are in Italy. And then Pramac Dantin is officially a Spanish team. That's this team that Liam Schubert worked for, the Ducati satellite team. But they have such a large Italian connection, a lot of Italian employees, the obvious Italian connection that they ride Ducatis. So it might as well be their sort of second home race as well. So, I mean, this race is really, really important for these teams. And not to mention Valentino Rossi, Loris Caparossi, and Marco Melandri, the 3 Italian riders in MotoGP. This is all their Mugello is their home circuit for these guys. So we've got a lot riding on this race here. It's going to be a good one. And Mugello is in Tuscany, which is just north of Florence, so that you you know for a fact that the food's going to be really, really good. And as Julian Ryder said, it's one of the tracks that you must visit at least once in your spectating career. It's quite a spectacle. You know, I personally haven't made it yet to Mugello, but maybe one day I'd like to. I've done 2 now of the MotoGP circuits. Another reason to go to a GP in Italy is that wild party atmosphere. And we've heard Liam talking about that. And I'm sure we're going to hear a few more stories from Liam about that in a future call. So we'll definitely have to talk to him about his experiences at Mugello and see how he did with that. Now, Rossi has won 5 races in a row at this track. So you know he's going to be gunning for a win on this one this year as well. He wants to turn things around and get, you know, back on track for him. He's been pushing as hard as he possibly can, and I think he's going to be bringing out all the stops at this track. But he might have a tough time of it against the Ducatis. Mugello has a long, long straight. It's a full 1,141 meters, so it's really going to be favoring the power of the Ducatis. And that, along with this fast final turn coming right onto the straight, makes it one of the fastest tracks in MotoGP races at all. You know, we're probably going to see top speeds and it's certainly in excess of 200 miles per hour. You know, if it's a dry race, you're definitely going to see them over 200 miles an hour, possibly as high as 210 odd miles an hour. We might see that 337 odd kilometers an hour that Casey Stoner did in China. That speed might be broken here at Mugello, possibly. It also has some good elevation changes at high speed chicanes. It's an interesting mix of fast and you know, slower corners. I don't want to say slow, but you know, no corner in MotoGP is truly slow, but fast and not so fast corners. You got 6 lefts and 9 right handers. And on top of that, the corners are wide. This track is at least 14 meters wide all over, so we might see several different lines going through these corners. Now, we're going to have to ask Jules Cisek about Tony Elias's lines going into some of these corners later, but we're going to see this. But you're going to see some interesting stuff from those aerial shots that MotoGP gives you where you see the guys going into the corners. And we might possibly see, hopefully see, a little bit going away from some of the freight train that we've been having in the second half of the races where they all take that 250 line. You know, it's a possibility. Weather at Mugello, the actual, you know, clouds, weather, sun, clouds, weather can be kind of wet this time of year. They've had... there was a wet race in 2004, which was kind of a messy one. And I believe both 2005 and 2006, they had like wet practice sessions and sort of rain off and on through the weekend, that kind of a thing. The weather forecast for Florence this weekend for Mugello 2007 looks pretty good. But there is a possibility of rain on Friday, but it should be dry on Saturday and Sunday. This is, of course, assuming that you can trust the weatherman to give you the weather for, you know, halfway across the world. But we are crossing our fingers. And chassis setup can be kind of tricky here because you really have to get a good balance on the bike. Riders really need to be able to change direction very quickly while dealing with downhill turns, especially that one onto the front straight. So typically this means lowering the front to quicken up the handling through those S's. And they're going to be using medium compression, rebound, and preload settings on the forks to give, you know, good feel for that corner entry. Then there's going to be some bumps on those corner exits typically at Mugello, so a fairly high rear spring rate will probably be used along with various other tricks like progressive linkage and things like that to kind of prevent the bike from squatting when the riders spool up the power coming out of those corners to get onto those straightaways. So why don't we take a quick audio lap of Mugello right about now? All right, we're starting off on the front straight, just passing the start-finish line here at Mugello. We're all the way up into sixth gear. You can't even see the right-hand turn at the end of the front straight. Now we're going down through the gears, down all the way to second gear for a 80-mile-an-hour right-hand turn at San Donato. It's a long looping hairpin. And then we move quickly into a left-hand turn at the Luco corner, another second gear, which transitions quickly into a right-hand turn at the Poggio Secco corner. Leads us onto a short straight where we're going up into through the gears, might get as high as fourth gear, and then we have a second gear left-hander at Maserati, and leading into a right-hander at Borgo San Lorenzo, more or less a chicane. Another short section of straightaway. And we've got a third gear turner here at the Casanova, probably doing 80 miles an hour, leading into a quick, sharp left-hander at the Savelli corner. Small section of straightaway. Then we have the double right-hander, Arrabbiata. It's a multiple apex, kind of a third gear corner that we're going around there. And then we get back onto a small section of straightaway, another right-hander at Scarperia, down to second gear here, leading into a quick left-hander at the Bellagio corner, still in second gear. Now we're on the back section here, going up through the gears a little bit, might get as fast as 100 mile an hour, leading into the Correntaro hairpin. I've got about a second gear corner here, going down to probably as slow as 70 miles an hour. Short section of straightaway, then we go to the Biondetti chicane. It's a quick left-right chicane. Onto the section of back straight here, going up through the gears again. Now back down through the gears to make the Bussini hairpin, which will lead us around onto the front straight again. We're all the way down to second gear for that. 60, going back up through the gears, getting a lot of power coming out onto the front straight. Now we're just about ready to pass the start-finish line. We're all the way up into sixth gear, and there we go. We've completed our lap of the Mugello circuit. Okay, that's a little thing that I've done now and then where we do the audio lap. I hope you kind of liked it and that it helped sort of get the layout of the land there for you. Like I said, Rossi has won 5 in a row here. And he's been on the podium last year when he, with him, when he won the race last year on the podium with him, were Loris Capirossi in second and Nicky Hayden in third. Now, this year, I put out a kind of a wild prediction, and I'm going to risk actually saying this on the show. I kind of got away from doing the predicting thing because I suck at it. But I'm going to go out on a limb here, and I'm going to say that Stoner might have a DNF. I think that Rossi is just going to have his mind game machine cranked up all the way to 11. He's going to have it on overdrive. And that, combined with the pressure that Stoner is naturally going to be having upon him, I think we might possibly see him choke. Now, of course, I'm not saying I want that to happen or anything like that, just that if it is going to be happening, it probably will be here. Now, if it doesn't happen, that's just one more proof positive of Stoner's maturity and racecraft and abilities as a rider. Not so much just as a rider, but as a racer, where he's able to sort of go above this level of mental game and not let the stress affect him and things like that. But I'm just going to predict that we might possibly see that happen, and I'm going to go with Rossi for the win. Capirossi in second, and then for third place, I'm pretty much got a completely blank slate. I mean, it could almost be anybody. You know, you could have Melandri, who's doing quite well for Honda this year. It could just as easily be Pedrosa, who took fourth in 2006 at Mugello, even though he's never really liked the track, but he did quite well. But on the other hand, you know, you could see Hopkins up there on the podium again for, you know, his second podium this year, because the Suzukis obviously are doing quite well. Or even for Milan, who won in Le Mans, might be able to take third there. So I know that's a huge waffle fest of hedging my bets and this and that there. So I am going to put it down here in not quite writing, but in speaking. I'm going to predict an all-Italian podium, Rossi, Capirossi, and Melandri for Mugello 2007. Okay, real quick, let's touch on the standings in the World Championship so far. As of round 5, the end of round 5, which was Le Mans, so going into Mugello, we have Casey Stoner in the lead with 102 points, a fairly commanding lead, actually, over Valentino Rossi, who is at 81. So Stoner has 21 points on Valentino Rossi. Then Danny Pedrosa is in third place at 62 points. Marco Melandri, fourth place, 61 points. Christopher Mullen, fifth place with 55 points. Those 25 points that he picked up in Le Mans were extremely valuable. John Hopkins, sixth place, 48 points. Doing pretty well. He has DNF in Spain. Kind of didn't help him out too much, but he only picked up 9 points in France. But at least, you know, he did finish. But I think we're going to see more out of Hopkins soon. Seventh place, Loris Capirossi, who, as we said earlier in the show, is quite disgruntled. He had 38 points. He may or may not be disgruntled, but we did say that earlier in the show. Eighth place, Tony Elias with 35 points. Ninth place, Colin Edwards also on 35 points. Tony Elias, though, gets a higher, he's in eighth rather than a true tied, because Tony finished second at Turkey. And 10th place, Alex Hoffman, doing excellent there on the Primec Dantin team. He's got 30 points. Nicky Hayden tied with, well, not, again, not tied, but in the same number of points with 30 points. He's in 11th spot. And Alex Barros, the other Primec Dantin rider, is in 12th spot with 27 points. Carlos Checa, riding for Honda LCR this year, has 20 points. Randy Dupuynier, on the Kawasaki, is 19 points in 14th spot in the standings. Shinya Nakano, 15th spot, got 15 points. And Sylvain Guintoli is in 16th spot with 12 points. Makoto Tomata, 17th spot with 11 points. Now we're getting all the way down the grid. Fonse Niedo, who rode for Jacques in France and did quite well, picked up 5 championship points, which actually puts him 18th in the world champion standings, even though he's only done one race this whole year and probably will only do one race this whole year. So, you know, he picked up 5 points. It's kind of cool for Fonse. He's in 18th. Olivier Jacques, who, like I said, missed China and France and got no points in Spain or Turkey. And, you know, so he only has 4 points. He's in 19th spot. And then dead last, 20th spot, Kenny Roberts Jr. with 4 points picking up at 3 points in Qatar and 1 point in China. So we are looking for a lot more out of Kenny Roberts Jr. soon. And why don't we real quick, let's cover the team standings too. We had for Ducati Marlboro team has got 140 points, so they're way out in front. Fiat Yamaha team has 116. Rizla Suzuki in third place, 103. They're doing quite well. Honda Gresini, 96. And in fifth spot, the Repsol Honda team, the factory Honda team, the superstars of MotoGP, fifth spot, 92 points. They are 48 points down from the leaders. Sixth spot, Pramac Dantin, the satellite Ducati team. They got 57 points. Seventh spot, Kawasaki Racing at 28. Ooh, ouch. Eighth spot, Dunlop Yamaha Tech 3. They got 23 points down there. Honda LCR is in ninth spot with 20 points. Konica Minolta Honda, 10th spot with 15 points. And Team KR, using Honda engines in their own chassis, 11th spot with 4 points. So there we go. There's the rider and the team championship standings. As we head into Mugello, we will next week have our Mugello race review and talk a little bit about how those championship standings have changed and what's going on and what happened at Mugello. Okay, that's it for today. Like I said, it was a little bit shorter of a show, kind of a hodgepodge of different stuff. I hope you enjoyed it. We're back somewhat, at least this week, we're back to the NPR for MotoGP sort of format, where it's just me talking to myself in here in this lonely dark room. But I enjoyed doing it, and I hope that you guys enjoyed listening to it. And like I said, send us an email, bob@motogpod.com. Thanks again very much for listening to the show. Enjoy the races, and we will talk to you again next week. Oh, geez, got the tape in there backwards here. One more time.
MotoGP is a trademark of Dorna Sports SL. The MotoGPOD podcast and MotoGPOD.com are not affiliated with Dorna Sports SL. All other trademarks are the property of their respective owners. MotoGPOD isn't affiliated with any of them.